Blog Talk Radio.
The spirit of the land has come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman. The spirit of the land has come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal Series, five wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and Susan's latest book, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses at the Wise Woman University. But you can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
I'm so glad to be here with you all once again. Green blessings to everyone, and green blessings to you, Rebecca. Are you there, Rebecca?
Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, yes.
Oh, great.
Good. How's your week,
Beth? Good evening. How are you?
Just fine.
Right.
I'm really enjoying this lovely cold weather.
Yeah, we got our rain back today, so everybody was worried about the rain here. So we're happy here in Oregon.
Good. Okay. And, yeah, people are complaining here because it's bitterly cold, but I really crave that cold, at least for a short amount of time during my year. Not that I would like it year-round. So do we have anyone waiting on the phone, or should we start with some questions from the email?
There's nobody waiting with a question on the phone, but I do see quite a few callers, so we'll see if anybody has a question here in a little bit, but we'll start with an email. So, says, my family has recently been diagnosed with pinworms, and we have taken one dose of Pin-X in addition to adding diatomaceous earth, a local proprietary anthelmintic herbal blend, lots of fresh garlic, pumpkin seeds, and the occasional umi plum paste to our diet. My sons are 3 and 18 months. He's still mostly breastfed, his choice. I believe we've had this condition for a long time, but we've never had visible worms. so the diagnosis was slow in coming. Any thoughts on treatments or shared experiences would be appreciated. And she goes on to say, I bet my weight in gold it's a full-blown epidemic, but no one wants to talk about it. Who wants to admit they're full of worms? Well, I'm not ashamed to say that I think that we've had it for years, and so have countless others. I feel strongly that it's a cause of a many misdiagnosed gluten allergy, lactose intolerance. She says, I've been losing weight despite eating like a logger, butter and coconut oil and bone broth, oh my. Losing hair, waking constantly, suffering from bloating, gas, 5 to 6 bowel movements a day, and cracking skin on my hands that hasn't healed in months. Literally just open sores on my knuckles that no amount of coconut oil or olive oil has been able to rehydrate. Our baby has had clear mucus in his stool several times a week or more, starting at 3 months old, and each doctor and acupuncturist we saw said I should restrict, change my diet, and see how it goes. How many others are receiving similar bad advice? And that's the whole question.
Where to start?
Did you get all of that, Susan?
I did indeed get all of it, and I'm not quite sure where to start. But let me start with this statement. We're not meant to live alone. We're truly not meant to live alone. Let me tell you a couple of stories that I think really show where I have come to believe in that statement. One concerns a medical doctor who was part of the World War II effort. He was stationed on a very small island in the South Pacific, and it did not see any action, and he felt rather useless. But then he realized that all of the people who lived on this island had a parasite. And this parasite was living in the only sources of fresh water available to the islanders. And so by consuming the fresh water, they were consuming the parasite. And he said to himself, well, ho, 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 I can certainly improve their lot in life. Poor dears, you know, they have this parasite and this is certainly holding them back. And even though I can't do much of anything else, I can kill the parasite. I have, a vermicide that I can put into the water and it will kill that and the people will be free. Well, not long after he did this, the war ended. And he returned home. Took up a busy practice as a medical doctor. And it wasn't until decades later that he thought to himself, I wonder how the people on that island are doing. And actually had the time and the wherewithal to go back to that island to check in on the islanders. And what he found was people who were very sick. He found people who were allergic to the primary foodstuffs that were available to them from the ocean and on that island. He found people who had all kinds of problems that they hadn't had before. Not just food allergies, but breathing allergies, pollen allergies, autoimmune diseases, whole host of things that he hadn't seen in the people before. Recall that he felt rather useless because there wasn't much for him to do there. And he was astonished. And he asked himself what could possibly be going on and went home to study. And he came to the conclusion that by eliminating the parasite from these people, it caused their immune system to freak out, to go on overdrive. He's not the only one, and I'm not the only one who's read his story and other stories. As a matter of fact, there's a whole thing called the hygiene hypothesis. And the hygiene hypothesis arises out of quite a lot of scientific evidence that children who are brought up where there are animals and they play in the dirt are far less likely to have autoimmune diseases and allergies than children who are brought up in cleanlier environments. The second story that I wanted to tell you, I read a long time ago, and it concerned a man who was even at that time a very famous gastroenterologist. And he, like anyone who does anything well, chafed at the people he couldn't help. He didn't like that there were people with irritable bowel syndrome and people with ulcerative colitis and people with Crohn's disease that he couldn't help to get better. And it came to him that what was missing from these people was parasites, specifically intestinal worms. And he gave 10 of his sickest patients a capsule containing the eggs of intestinal worms. So that they wouldn't be alone. 9 of them had complete recoveries from their problems. The 10th one died. 10th one had ulcerative colitis, and an ulcer in his intestine broke through. And death was a result of that, so he was rushed into surgery. As I said, I read this story a long time ago, and in fact, it has taken this long for this idea to start to gain medical credence, for the hygiene hypothesis to start to flex its muscles. It is an old belief, and perhaps in some areas of the world or in bygone days, it was important to think about whether or not you had worms. But the assertion that you and your children have pinworms without symptoms is one that I simply cannot buy. Anyone who has ever had pinworms know that pinworms cause a very itchy anus. You're not going to miss the symptoms of pinworms, and they do crawl out. If you have a child still in diapers, you are definitely going to see pinworms, which are also called threadworms, the little white worms, in the bowel movement in that diaper. Pinworms are not without symptoms because they usually live in the lower part of the large intestine, the part that, in fact, is most connected to the outside world. There are, of course, many other types of parasites, some of which live higher up in the intestines, some of which are microscopic. Basically, what I can say is that you are engaging in the scorched earth policy about what's going on in your body, and I would not want to get in your way for fear that I too would be scorched. Green blessings.
So we do have somebody waiting with a question.
Good. Do you know what I mean by scorched earth policy, Rebecca?
I'm not quite sure what you mean by that.
It's a term that means that when you conquer someone, that you burn everything down.
Yeah, so by her using like Pinex, something that's really, that kills a lot of other things in her system too.
Well, that and the garlic and the anthelmintic and the, you know, just so many things to me is overkill and is a scorched earth policy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
so would you suggest doing anything?
So that's
that's
the kind of person that, again, I would be afraid to get in her way.
Mm-hmm.
I can't make a diagnosis over the telephone. But again, pinworms cause symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't suggest doing anything against pinworms without knowing, in fact, that I had pinworms. And when people say, this person has told me that I have worms, I say, did they do a stool sample? It's a very easy test. It will pick up if there are parasites, worms, whatever present. And it certainly needs to be done before heavy-duty herbs or light-duty drugs are taken. There was an herbalist some years back who believed that everyone had worms and gave everyone black walnut to get rid of the worms. And it sounded very much like, the things that she said sounded very much like what the woman was saying in the letter there. So, to me, this does not have the ring of truth.
Mm.
And that's why I don't want to get any further involved with it. So let's open up the phone line and talk to the person who's waiting.
Sounds good. In the 831 area code?
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. I'm here.
And so you're just starting to talk infant.
It's true. Actually, I'm the author of the question that you just read, and I wanted to clarify a couple things because I realized later that I hadn't really said all there was to say. I'm really interested. Hi, baby. I'll put you down. I was really interested in hearing more about this because this is something I've been following on a couple different herbal threads, and I feel like there's a lot going on there that would be good for us. So, I received a diagnosis for pinworms from a doctor who actually was just guesstimating, and my family was feeling very desperate. So we took the Pinex, and then after we took it, I immediately had everyone poop on a bag so I could look at their poop, because even though I look at it in the toilet, we hadn't actually physically handled any of it, and sure enough, there were thousands of tiny worms and various sizes, and they matched all of the pictures that I had seen online of pinworms, and then after that, we began to see them hanging out of everyone's anus when I changed diapers or wiped bottoms or what have you. Checked myself out with a mirror, that sort of thing. And it just was very unnerving because it's worms and it's gross. And I've heard so many equal parts of get it out of there and leave it. It's helping you. So our family is very, very interested and supported by fermented foods. So I've been sauerkrauting and doing various forms of lacto-fermentation for almost 10 years now, and our diet is full of that. We also eat a good amount of grass-fed beef and chicken, and we drink raw milk, and we eat a lot of butter, and I believe really strongly that for lack of a better word, the Sally Fallon nourishing traditions way of life.
That all sounds really good, but let me ask you this. If you ate that way and you walked outside in a rainstorm without an umbrella, would you get wet?
Oh, absolutely.
What you eat has nothing to do with whether or not you have pinworms.
Okay.
So if you want to talk about it, that's fine. But it is not your...
Yeah, no, I guess I was mostly mentioning gut health in general, like trying to support gut health. So I'm interested in the idea that living things should be in there. I guess that's where I was going with that.
Yeah, that sounds very good to me. So the most important thing when your family has pinworms is what I call hysterical hygiene.
Okay.
Every single diaper, sheet, towel, underwear, and you can go further, needs to be washed in hot water. A little bleach doesn't hurt.
I have been doing that for a couple weeks now.
Okay, each one of those worms can lay 10,000 eggs a night.
Okay.
And the eggs are sticky, and it's very easy to get them under your fingernails and to re-ingest.
We have been keeping those short.
Good.
Very short.
So that's what I mean by hysterical hygiene. Fingernails short.
Okay.
Nail brush at the sink, hand washing, hot water, soap, nail brushing after any toileting. But hysterical about hygiene. What's the life cycle of pinworms?
My understanding is something between 10 days and 2 weeks before
that's
the worm itself
dies. That's my understanding
dies.
As well. And so usually you have to keep it up for 2 life cycles.
Okay.
And then you should be safe to back off the hysterical hygiene.
Okay. And as far as... Oh, you want to get in there? Here, baby. Here. As far as herbal support, I'm not sure how far to go because I understand that living organisms in our gut are an excellent thing, so I don't want to wipe out...
You're putting the garlic in the wrong end.
So garlic, like I would do for a yeast infection, up the rear?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And I have put... I have put
and
Juliette
Berkeley Levy says that actually prevents them from crawling out and laying eggs.
So is it the problem that they're, do you feel like it's a problem that they're in there? Like we should live with them symbiotically? Because I feel like we've had, I didn't mention
in
the,
I was responding to the tone of your letter.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and I realized afterwards that I had left out a lot of...
And everybody has worms, you know, and it's like, this woman's a little unhinged here, you know.
No,
I
did feel unhinged.
Worms.
I was feeling a little desperate.
I totally understand, but I don't think everybody has worms any more than everybody is wet all the time. But, yes, if you go outside in the rain without an umbrella, you will get wet. If you are exposed to pinworm eggs, you will get them. It doesn't matter how healthy you are. It doesn't matter what you're eating.
Mm-hmm. I think I was mostly mentioning the eating habits as an example of how I would like my gut to continue good health.
Not talking about that at all. That sounds just fine. I'm talking about the tone of your email.
Yeah, I was definitely a desperate mommy who had a few too many wakeful nights.
I understand, but desperation shouldn't lead to accusing everyone else of having worms.
No, exactly. I'm just more curious because the first few diagnoses I experienced were of, you have a gluten allergy, or, you have a this.
A very long time now, and I think that we need to pay attention to someone else. But please feel free to write or call again.
I really appreciate your advice and information on it, and we'll just keep doing what we're doing with the crazy hygiene.
That's good.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Hello, I'm here.
Hi.
My question is about herbs and things that can support digestion for myself and my newborn. My 3-month-old broke out with eczema about a month ago. And after trying to take some things out and noticing some things, I'm added extra probiotics to my diet and to his. He's breastfeeding besides just the probiotics, and trying to cut down on carbs and eat more fermented foods and more vegetables and things like that. Because of a cold my kids had, I read in Wise Woman Herbal for the Child during the Year about slippery elm bark, and realized that it could be good for the digestion also, since he's become constipated around Christmas, and then when I added the probiotics, that's helped a lot, but I've seen some mucousy stools and things like that, and so I'm just trying to get some kind of changing my view of taking foods out is just trying to heal myself up, and hopefully that will help heal him out too.
I think that's a really good approach. I really support you in that approach. It's scary when your infant gets eczema, was it over a large area of the body?
It started out actually just in his eyebrows, and I noticed when he was a month old, I noticed if I had much dairy and not a lot of probiotics, it was worse. But then over Christmas, we were visiting, and I had a lot more dairy than I had been eating. But since Christmas, it went from just like a spot on in his eyebrows and on his forehead to all over his face, really. And he's really red and bumpy all over the rest of his body.
Yes, that and the greater the area, the more concerned that we are. And I very much agree with you that increasing your intestinal flora will definitely help in terms of your baby. And that giving your baby in good sources of intestinal flora, even though the baby's only 3 months old and only breastfeeding, is just fine. You could get a recipe to lacto-ferment just about anything and let your baby have some of the juice from those lacto-fermented foods. That's an easy way to get those things into babies, as well as they are often totally willing to eat yogurt, make sure that it's full-fat yogurt. And I'm wondering if you're drinking nourishing herbal infusions.
Say that again? I'm sorry, they cut out.
I was wondering if you are drinking nourishing herbal infusions.
I did throughout my pregnancy, but I've really fallen off of that since my baby was born 3 months ago. Throughout the pregnancy, I drank a lot of alfalfa and red raspberry in particular.
Uh-huh. And how did you make it?
According to the directions in the herbal for the childbearing year, for putting a big handful or two in a large, usually I do a half a gallon jar and put a few big handfuls in, and let it steep for 4 hours.
So I would think that stinging nettle would be a really excellent infusion for you to work with. And would be very helpful for your baby. It's said that stinging nettle reverses allergic reactions.
Wonderful.
And it's one of the most respected plants in terms of helping people to overcome allergies. So
wonderful.
By your drinking the stinging nettle, we would hope that enough of it would be in your breast milk to help your baby. Does the
Is stinging nettle different from...
Go ahead.
Is stinging nettle different from, like, is it different from just regular nettle?
No, regular nettle is stinging.
Okay, great.
They're both the same.
Great.
Yeah.
Good. I'll make up a batch right now.
Excellent. Green blessings, and maybe call us back in a month and let us know what's up. Huh?
Yes, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good night.
Bye.
All right. In the 973 area code.
Hi, Susan and everyone. Lovely
Hi.
To join the call. This is my first
thank
time
you.
Joining you on the call. So thank you so much for your service in the world, Susan. I really appreciate it. And I just wanted to confirm two things with you. In terms of the herbal infusions, just wanted to confirm, if I'm using a measuring cup, so it's like, you know, the 8-ounce U.S. measuring cup, how much oat straw would I put in there? I know it's like 2 tablespoons, you know, dry weight, but I don't have a scale, so I'm using that cup.
Don't use a cup. You cannot
okay.
use a cup. Don't use a cup. You can't use a cup. I don't know what you're going to do. You have no access to a scale?
I'll just go get one.
Thank you.
Just wondering if there was an easy conversion, you know. But
absolutely.
And
you see, the cup measure is a volume measurement.
Right, and the other was a weight. And so I heard
you,
it.
So if I said use 1 ounce of material, whether it's lead or feathers, and you said how much is that in the measuring cup, what could I tell you? If I told you the right amount for lead, it would be wrong for feathers.
Right.
And believe me, the herbs do differ by that much.
Yeah.
And they differ from batch to batch. And it depends on who has cut them up. So when I buy, say, stinging nettle, mm-hmm. which has been commercially cut, 1 ounce of it is going to be a smaller volume than 1 ounce of the nettle I've harvested here at Laughing Rock Farm and cut up, because I don't cut it up nearly as small as that machine does.
Gotcha. Oh, fantastic. Thanks for sharing that light. So I'll just go out and get a scale and make it easy,
right,
and then it's all uniform.
They're inexpensive, you know,
mm-hmm.
Office supply stores sell great electronic scales, and get one with a T-A-R-E function, a tear function.
Right.
And what that means is you put a bowl on the scale that you're going to weigh the herb in, and then you turn the scale on, and it
mm-hmm.
automatically subtracts the weight of the bowl.
Right, it zeroes it out, yeah. Okay, great.
Zeroes
and
it
then
out. Makes it really easy. And then I have been making infusion virtually every single night for over 25
yeah.
years, and I weigh it
That's
out.
Fantastic. And I've got the oat straw now and the nettles and the red clover, so I'm really psyched, really pumped
Wonderful.
For this new year. Yes,
okay.
And just
okay.
one last question on beloved kale. I'm really looking up my, get the maximum benefits from kale, and I'm wondering, I believe, but I just want to confirm with you, I think I had seen somewhere by you, maybe it was on the web, maybe in your book, that you recommended, but to cook kale to get the maximize the calcium benefits, you cook it for an hour. I may be incorrect in that,
at a minimum.
To get all the minerals extracted. Okay. And
you're
so that...
You're not going to really extract anything from the kale. We're cooking it. We're not extracting.
Okay. And is that steamed or like with the steam basket or boiled or when you say cooked for an hour?
Here's how I cook greens like kale or collard. I chop them. With kale, I will usually strip the leaf off the midrib and give the midrib to the rabbits that I keep.
Okay.
And chop the greens. And I put between an inch and an inch and a half of water in the bottom of a pan and put a fire on under that while I'm preparing the greens, while I'm rinsing them and chopping them. And by the time the water is boiling, I'm ready to start putting double handfuls of wet greens into the pot. And if it's collards or I'm cooking the stalk, I put the stalks, the chopped stalks, first into the pot. And then up toward the top of the leaf, because it's laid out on my counter and it's easy to pick up in order. And I, using a wooden spoon, stir my greens as they are in the pot, making sure that they're all moving down into the bottom of the pot and wilting. And what starts out a very large mass of greens wilts down into a shadow of its former self.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, that inch to inch and a half of boiling water will be about halfway up the level of the greens, because the greens will have melted down. I
yeah.
then turn down the fire so that the water simmers. Put a tight lid on the pot. So we are both boiling and steaming at the same time.
Gotcha. Oh, lovely.
And I let it cook like that for as long as I possibly can. an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, it's all good. You got to check it while it's cooking.
Wonderful.
Make sure that your water doesn't boil away, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, that's a big thing. I've been setting
can't
the timer.
Just
it's
like,
whoa.
Can't just, like, totally space out on it. And stoves are different. Like, some stoves you can really turn down low, and they'll just kind of, like, simmer away, and they'll be fine. And usually by the time my greens are cooked, there's just about nothing left of the water.
Yeah, nice.
So I'm not
lovely melody.
I'm not sending my vegetables for swimming lessons.
Well, thank you so much. Perfect. Loving the melody of the water and the greens.
Exactly.
The greens are ready. The water's done. Beautiful harmony, Susan. Thank
you.
You
did see it in the e-zine, and it was the one-hour challenge, and I challenged people to cook their kale or their collards for an hour and to see if they would go back to steaming it.
I was steaming it in the basket, and I wasn't sure. And I was like, you know, I've got to ask her, you know. And so then, no need to respond to my email that I sent you because went on my laptop and saw, oh, you're live tonight. So great. So
yeah,
I'm thankful.
Good.
Kismet.
Okay.
Thank you, and happy birthday early.
Thank you. Green blessings.
Green blessings to you too. Bye now.
Bye bye.
Okay, next
hey,
it's caller.
Good you kept opening those phone lines.
What's that?
I said it's good you kept opening those phone lines.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the 239 area code, in the 770.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, we can hear you.
Hi. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I am recovering from a recent cancer treatment.
Yes.
Started out with chemo, ended up doing the surgery, then did radiation, and all of that's behind me. What I did during the time, I was taking the some Lingzi mushrooms. I was doing radiation. I followed some of your suggestions in your book. I did the miso broth. I did black tea. I also ended up doing some food-grade hydrogen peroxide for oxygen. what I'm doing now, after everything is behind me, is to try to cleanse and get rid of all of that gook. So I've been drinking or making my own dandelion tea as an infusion, of course. I make it. I drink it every day. I also have been making astragalus tea infusion. I drink that twice a day with some jujube fruits. I also put that in the astragalus infusion. And I've been really just, those are the only two things I've been doing, the dandelion to cleanse, the astragalus to strengthen my immune system. And I was wondering if you have any more suggestions as to what I could incorporate into this new regime, if you will, that I'm now doing. It's just the two things. It just seems like I should be doing something else, but I'm not really sure what that is.
Okay. There are three traditions of healing: the scientific tradition, which measures and fixes; the heroic tradition, which balances and cleanses; and the wise woman tradition, which nourishes wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
If we had to cleanse radiation and chemotherapy out of our body, then we'd only have to do it once. The fact that we have to do it repeated times already tells us that it doesn't stay in our body. Cleansing is antithetical to health. Now, that said, I consider dandelion an herb that is extremely nourishing to the liver. And I see absolutely no reason for you to stop consuming dandelion. I think it's a wonderful thing to use. Astragalus is one of the greatest of all of the herbs from China. Its uses are just too numerous to go into, and it is an aid to longevity, an aid to proper functioning of the immune system. It's just an all-around good choice, and certainly no problem with the jujube fruit. Mm-hmm. I, of course, would suggest drinking the nourishing herbal infusions on a rotating basis.
Okay.
So that would be stinging nettle, oat straw,
nettle. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Red clover,
okay.
Linden, comfrey leaf.
Mm-hmm.
And I rotate through those five herbs, making an infusion, weighing out 1 ounce of one herb, putting it in a quart jar and filling the jar to stop with boiling water, letting that steep overnight, tightly lidded, and then straining that, refrigerating it, and drinking it throughout the day. Astragalus, because it is a tonic and can be taken over a long period of time, I would make a quart of astragalus infusion once a week, and I would keep that refrigerated. And I would have approximately half a cup of that a day.
Half a cup.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I've been doing a cup.
We don't need to take a lot of astragalus at a time because we're going to be taking it for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so with each of the other five that you mentioned, I should drink the entire quart. So each day I would have a different tea each day.
Each day I have a different infusion.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
correct.
Okay, perfect. Perfect.
And my goal is to drink that quart over the period of a day. And mm-hmm. that should be in lieu of or instead of water or other liquids,
I'm sorry, you said it should be in lieu of?
Or instead of.
Instead of water. Oh, okay. Oh.
I just gave a talk at a women's health symposium, and I started out. It was, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they've been at the symposium all day, and I thought, well, I really have to catch their attention. So I walked up with my mug of infusion, took a big swallow, put it down, and said, I never drink water.
Hmm.
And I told them why I never drink water and the kinds of problems that I see women getting into who are drinking water.
Could you share that? I'm very surprised.
Sure. There was, I don't know, might have come out of the U.S. Army or something, a study that showed that the human body needs 2 quarts of water a day. Mm-hmm. And that's an absolutely true study. What is usually not realized when people talk about this study, it's kind of the you need 2 quarts of water a day rule there, is that first of all, a quart of that fluid comes from the food that we eat.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need only to replace, except in certain severe circumstances, about a quart of fluid a day by ingesting fluid. And that quart of fluid a day, any fluid counts. Coffee, tea, infusion, anything counts. What happens if you start drinking more than that, if you start adding quarts of water in addition to that, is that you start to dilute your electrolytes.
Wow.
And the electrolytes are very important in terms of the nervous system, in terms of the rhythm of the heart, and in terms of muscle function.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember, but actually quite a while ago, there was an Olympic runner who died as he crossed the finish line from an electrolyte imbalance.
That is very, very, very good information. Thank you for that. And that makes sense, what you're saying. Well, why wouldn't it make sense? Anyway, that's great. Okay. Well, I will definitely incorporate these five into my support system, and I do appreciate this. I really do.
You are welcome. Green blessing. And good night.
You too. Take care.
Okay. I think that that's why people are asking me these questions. It's because I'm not a doctor. And so I certainly have said, and I'll continue to say, I can't diagnose. I can't diagnose, certainly over the telephone. I pretty much have to take your word for it and go by what I know and do my best. And I'm not prescribing, because herbs are people's medicine. Herbal medicine is people's medicine. This is a medicine that grows right outside your door. It's right there. It's yours for the taking, if you wish to take it. The World Health Organization says that over 90% of the health care that's done on this planet is done by women in their own homes using the plants that grow around them. Herbal medicine is people's medicine. I'm so glad that we have doctors and diagnostic tools and that we have drugs and surgery, because there are certainly times and places where those are the very best things. But they are overused. And for many of us, seeking simpler, safer beginnings is good sense. Who else can we answer, Rebecca?
In the 917 area code?
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, yeah. I just want to apologize for, I've just been hearing the show, and I love listening to the show every week, but it seems like there's been so many distractions from these men. And I just want to tell you, Susan, that you're amazing, and that, you know, everything that you provide to the world and all the knowledge that you have is just truly incredible, and you inspire me so much. So just sorry for the disrespect. I'll apologize for them. But I do have a very quick question. I've been reading. I'm a student, so my eyes are always looking at the screen and, you know, getting tired. And I recently heard of using Eyebright maybe to do a compress or do eye washes. And I guess I wanted to hear your thoughts on it. And how it would be best used on me, I guess.
Eyebright, Euphrasia officinalis, is a very small plant that is pretty uncommon in North America. I was actually surprised to find it a common part of many meadows in Germany, especially southern Germany, and well into Switzerland. So I do use Eyebright more when I am in Europe than I do when I'm in the United States. The plant is called Eyebright, not because it has anything at all to do with eyes or eyesight, but because it has a flower which appears to have a white eye or a bright eye. So certainly you could use this rather rare little plant as a compress on your eyes, but why? When chickweed, which is a very common herb and is known to be wonderful for the eyes, is so easily at hand.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to look first toward the local common plants, the weeds that are growing around me, for the help that they can offer. If for some reason I can't find something nearby or at hand that can help, and often that's simply because of my ignorance, then I will look further afield. But I am suspecting that you don't have Eyebright growing outside your door.
Okay. No, I don't.
No, you don't.
No,
but
I don't.
Unless you...
Yeah.
Unless you're in Maine or, you know, someplace where it might be.
Yeah.
Whereas, depending on where you are and what the weather is like there, you could very well have chickweed growing outside your door right now. We found chickweed
in Central New York.
Yeah, we found chickweed in Amsterdam at this time of year, growing in planters. I just harvested some chickweed this morning from one of my plants that I brought in from the deck that's tender and had to come into the house, and there's a profuse growth of chickweed in it.
Mm.
So,
oh, that sounds good. I have chickweed, actually. So how do you suggest that I use it again? Just compress is fine?
just a compress, yes. Usually people say to do whatever it takes to get some juice from it. Pound it between two rocks, chew it up with your teeth, you know, whatever works for you to get it juicy and a little softer. And then just put it right on your eyes. But more to the point.
Okay.
What I find very useful is to print things out. Reading.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Reading print on paper is a far different thing for my eyes than reading on the screen.
Yeah. And I've been doing that recently, especially because I'm also a writer, so revising and then rereading again and revising on the computer again, it just doesn't even work for me because I don't know, it just feels tiring, you know, and then I just don't even want to read the work. It's weird.
Yes.
So I just printed it and I just started doing that, yeah.
Yeah. So with a great, you know, bow to the trees and a thankfulness for the paper that they provide, print more out. And give your eyes a break. Have you ever heard of palming?
Yes, I have. I have, yeah.
And so for the benefit of those listeners who haven't, what we're talking about is rubbing our hands briskly together until the palms get warm, putting in a seated position the elbows on the knees, and then leaning the upper body forward so that the face comes into the palms of the hands with the palms as much as possible over the eyes. And imagining that the eyes are falling into the palms, and this is palming. It's very restful and refreshing to the eyes. And when you remove your hands from your eyes, you look down at the ground. And then just very slowly come back up. I have been, rather facetiously, because I don't have $1 million, offering $1 million for a great many years now to the first person who comes up with software that turns the computer after 1 hour off displaying this message, I cannot work for you until you return with an elevated heart rate. Because we are not machines, and we need to move, and we move too little when we are glued to our screens.
That's correct.
And that's...
Well, that just sounds great.
That's also part of that tiredness in the eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So well, eye bright would kind of be like sticking a Band-Aid on your eyes, right?
Yeah. I'll
it's
use the chickweed.
What's really going on, use the chickweed. And it sounds like you're doing great.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope the rest of your talk show goes swiftly and non-interrupted, I hope.
Thank you so much. I think we have somebody coming on this evening to talk to us. Chakra.
Chakra Earth Song Levy, yes.
There we go. Chakra Earth Song Levy will be with us in just about half an hour at 9 o'clock, and we still have time to answer more questions, either from emails or from callers.
Okay, well, we have some callers waiting on the line, so we'll see how this goes.
Okay, we got some email questions?
We do. So... It's the next email question. Help, hi, I live in Idaho. I have been diagnosed with Graves' disease 4 years. The doctors here wanted to kill my thyroid. I have been fighting this type of thinking and have been trying to research on my own. I have totally changed my diet, eating non-GMO foods, buying organic from local farmers and growers. I have been off medication for over 5 months and using supplements and bugle weed tincture. My blood work came back almost perfect a few weeks ago. But I was also given a couple bone scans. They are showing my bones getting weaker and weaker. Not quite to osteoporosis yet. I have been reading and finally found your websites. Please tell me where to buy some of the herbs like young horsetail and nettle. I have just started reading your work and feel strongly that I need to follow your herbal healing.
If you come visit me at SusanWeed.com, and I keep the sun in Susan, but we also own Susan Weed as well as Susan Weed, so come to spell it or misspell it, you'll still get to SusanWeed.com. And there, I believe, on the homepage, you will find links to people who are trustworthy and sell very good quality dried herbs. Also, all of my books list sources for buying dried herbs. We are so lucky, so blessed to live in the United States, where there are so many fine purveyors of dried herbs. If you don't like the ones that you see in my books that are linked from my website, I'm sure that you can find best more yourself. The thing to remember is we're looking for people who, by and large, aren't selling herbs and capsules. Herbs, powdered herbs and capsules, are the most expensive, least effective, and most dangerous way to use herbs. We're looking to buy our herbs in bulk. Green blessings, and thanks for asking.
Okay. The next question, it says, how do you brush your teeth, and do you have any herbal dental care practices you would recommend? Would you use licorice root powder or licorice root itself?
I have a small electric toothbrush. Maybe A is not the correct thing to say. I have an electric toothbrush in the bathroom. I have an electric toothbrush beside my bed. I have an electric toothbrush by the chair where I often sit. I have an electric toothbrush in the car, and I have an electric toothbrush in my suitcase. So I don't have any excuse. And obviously, I certainly don't need running water to brush my teeth. I usually wet the toothbrush with some herbal tincture. Yarrow is one of my favorites, but bloodroot, if you can stand the bitter taste of it, is another one that is known to be extremely good for the gums. Myrrh is another tincture. It can leave your mouth feeling kind of sticky and tacky because it's a resin, so it's not as nice to brush with as the yarrow is. There's a great number of astringent herbs that have been used for brushing the teeth because they tighten up the gums and help to counter bacteria. I certainly would not use licorice, but that's partly a personal preference, and that personal preference extends to the fact that I don't use licorice. I don't like licorice, and I'm concerned that it's an herb that can very easily raise blood pressure, although there is some talk back and forth about that. Most herbalists suggest buying deglycerized licorice. You've probably heard me talking about the fact that I prefer to look outside my door because herbal medicine is the medicine that's right outside my door, and licorice is not right outside my door. So when you add together the fact that I don't much like the taste of licorice, the fact that it's not outside my door, the fact that I, even if it was, I couldn't just harvest it and use it, I have to get rid of a substance in the licorice that can drive my blood pressure up, well then, my answer is no. I wouldn't use licorice powder as a dentifrice. Salt, baking soda, those are things that I've heard of people using. All various kinds of twigs from neem in India to sumac in North America, sweet birch, which is also called black birch, Betulin nigra, twigs, contain xylitol, and xylitol is a very profound anti-cavity substance. It's very interesting. One found in many kinds of birch, but I think in greatest concentration in the Macula Nigra. So a lot of different ways and things that we can work with our teeth. I do have, I believe, an MP3, but I know that I have a CD called Great Big Smile, and it is about herbal mouth care, and that will bring you some more information, as well as a book called Where There Is No Dentist, which is a companion volume to Where There Is No Doctor. Thanks for asking. Green blessings.
All right. Let's move on to the next email question. Dear Susan, it's so odd how life works. I recently bought your book, Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, and a few passages that I read were very familiar. I am pretty sure that I had frequented your website years ago. I am contacting you because I had a question about your caution about ginger infusions. I have always made chai tea and turmeric juice milk by boiling the peeled and sliced roots for up to an hour. Nowadays, I had really been enjoying a combination elixir where I boil about an inch of ginger, turmeric root, 6 cloves, 2 peppercorns, cardamom, and raw honey. It really helps my skin and in preventing colds. My question is, should I not be boiling these at all? Why exactly should ginger not be boiled? Is it harmful in general, and what about in the future, pregnancy? Please let me know when you get a chance. Yours truly.
In the front part of each one of my books is a section called Using Herbs Safely. And in that section, and the green book, Healing Wise, of course, it only has 5 herbs, doesn't have that section. In that section, I divide the herbs into 4 primary categories. The first category is nourishing herbs. These are herbs that are very similar to foods and are used in food-like ways, like stinging nettle, oat straw, red clover, chickweed, rose hips, elderberry. These are the kinds of food-like herbs, astragalus, slippery elm. The second category is tonifying herbs. These are herbs that are more like exercise. They would be things that we would probably use long-term, like chasteberry, dandelion, burdock, yellow dock, chicory, ginseng, American ginseng could go in that tonic category. As I said, you'll find many, many choices of herbs within that. And tonic herbs, like exercise, are generally healthy, so long as we don't overdo it. The third category is stimulating and sedating herbs. Stimulating and sedating herbs are herbs where we start to get into a little bit of a danger. And the danger here is that whenever we stimulate, we are going outside of our healthy boundary of activity. And like water undercutting a bank, the constant use of stimulus undercuts our core energy so that eventually the bank falls into the river because it doesn't have any support. Similarly, when we use stimulants on a daily basis, when we use them as life support, by drinking them first thing in the day and throughout the day, as many people do with a variety of stimulants, whether it's coffee, tea, black pepper, chai, or what have you. These are all stimulants, mate. All right. The stimulants take us outside of our healthy zone of activity and, as it were, drive us. And they drive us in a way that guts us, that leaves us not knowing that we have a certain hollowness. Let's think about the things that are in what you're making. Now, you don't say where it is that you live. And I might be making an incorrect assumption, but I'm going to assume that you are living in North America and not in India. Most of the things that you were talking about, and of course the idea of chai itself, comes from India, from a place that is extremely hot. There, boiling ginger and drinking a small amount of it can actually help one in a very hot climate where there is a lot of infectious organisms, both in the food and that are trying to find their way into any crack in your skin. Turmeric, similarly, comes from those very hot climates. Black peppercorns come from those very hot climates. Cinnamon, cloves, sometimes put in chai, from very hot climates. This is not a drink that is healthy for someone who lives in the temperate region. Again, my problem with it is twofold. Stimulating ourselves on a daily basis rather than nourishing ourselves does not build health, but undercuts health. And two, these are not people's medicine where we live. They are people's medicine in India, but we are completely dependent on others harvesting and bringing these plants to the market for us. If we rely on them, then we have not fulfilled the promise of herbal medicine, which is it's right outside your door. Green blessing.
The next letter is a love letter saying, "Hello, Susan Weed. Happy New Year to you, too. I just wanted to thank you for the lovely, beautiful flowers that you sent me. Hope someday I'd be able to join you with your wellness center in Costa Rica. I enjoy reading your books. It brings me so much joy and laughter. It is so funny. I also wanted to thank you for signing all the books. I have never got anyone signing my books before. I am so happy. Wishing you and your family a blessed, happy New Year with much love."
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you for reading that, Rebecca.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the next question is, "Hi, I have enjoyed reading through the Wise Woman Tradition website. I am currently 5 months pregnant and planning for breastfeeding. I had a very low supply with my first baby, due in part to a breast reduction surgery when I was 18. So I'm planning ahead for this one. One of the things I'm doing is making herbal tinctures and preparing herbal capsules. Could you tell me if it would be more beneficial for me to take alfalfa as a tincture, infusion, or in capsules? Thanks so much for any insight you can provide."
For a mom-to-be who is looking to enrich and increase her breast milk supply, no tinctures of any kind would be useful, and no herbs in capsules of any kind would be useful. In fact, for a woman who's pregnant or a woman who's lactating, I would be very, very cautious about ever using any herb in a capsule at all. Even if you have made that capsule yourself, you've still bought the powdered herb and you just don't truly know what's in that powder. A fairly recent study looking at brand name powdered herbs in capsules found a huge percentage of them, well over half of them, did not have the amount or the type of plant in the capsule that was listed on the label. So the fact that you've bought something doesn't mean that it's really that. If it's powdered, you can't tell for sure. Instead, what I would do is get a supply of fenugreek seed. In India, they call fenugreek methi, and I think it's a much more beautiful name for it, but you're not going to find it sold as methi. You'll find it sold as fenugreek. A spoonful, anywhere from a teaspoon to a tablespoon, full of fenugreek seed in a cup, and the cup then filled to the top of boiling water and allowed to steep even for as little as 2 minutes really helps bring in the milk supply, and not just at the beginning, but throughout the period of lactation, the weeks and months of lactation. It does it rapidly. It makes the milk taste even sweeter. It makes your sweat smell like maple syrup. Fenugreek has got a lot of wonderful things going for it. I often will suggest that moms even make a quart of fennel seed tea. Don't let it brew too long. Just a couple of minutes is good for fenugreek, for your fenugreek tea. And then you can keep some in the refrigerator so that you can grab some and sit and drink it while you're nursing your baby. Both during the pregnancy and during the lactation, one of the things that makes breast milk rich and abundant are nourishing herbal infusions, like stinging nettle, like oat straw, like red clover. These are all wonderful herbs to use as infusions, not capsules, not tinctures. I hope this and further information that you'll find at my website, my books, and YouTube will help you. Blessed be. Green blessing.
Okay, let's be brave and take this caller on the phone.
Sure.
In the 631 area code?
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, Susan. It's your friend from Long Island. Calling and giving you an update on what's going on with the suggestions you've given me over the past few months concerning fibroids, endometrial polyps, and ovarian cysts. I was diagnosed in November with endometrial polyps, four very large fibroids and cysts. And because of a problem with New York State health care, the health insurance that the HMO I was that I'm signed up with did not have any gynecologist in the entire county that I lived in. So they had to go out of network and have me see a local gynecologist. I've seen her for the third time, and she's suggesting that I have a cystogram to inject saline and then do a sonogram to get a better picture of what's going on inside the uterus and a better picture of the endometrium. I was wondering what your thoughts are on this procedure.
Yes.
Oh,
please
sorry.
Forgive me for not remembering. Are you in pain?
Oh, Colette.
Hi, Colette. Are you in pain?
Not right now, no.
Do these things that we're talking about cause you pain at other times?
It was extremely painful a month ago, and after doing castor oil packs, I actually passed an endometrial polyp, took it to the local emergency room, and they came back with the biopsy that it was an endometrial polyp and it was benign.
Excellent. So my tendency with benign growth is not to aggravate them if you are pain-free. So I think the question is, do you want a better look at what's going on inside your uterus? And if the answer is yes, is this procedure the only way to get that better look? And the answer is no. It's not the only way. Is it the only way that you would accept that's possible? I don't know what the answer to that is. But there's a women's health clinic that I support by giving them donations, and they, quite a while ago, asked for extra donations because they wanted to buy a piece of equipment for, medical imaging. And I wrote back and said to them, I'm not going to give you any extra donation for this piece of equipment because the amount of money that it would cost to buy that piece of equipment would keep a medical psychic at your clinic on a good salary for 10 years.
Hmm.
And they wrote back and said, yes, but no one would believe her. Now, you don't have to go outside your own body. After all, you live in it.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know what's going on inside your uterus, you ask your uterus what's going on. You may not, however, feel up to it, and it's possible that you don't feel like you would believe yourself. I have met women who said, well, I couldn't possibly believe a thing. You know, I asked my uterus what was going on. Maybe it's just my fear talking, or maybe it's just my stupidity talking, or maybe it's, you know. So, again, you know, it's a very personal thing. Do you have a relationship with your body? Do you listen to what your body tells you? Do you respect what your body tells you and do your best to act on it? Or do you feel that you're out of touch and you would like somebody else to do it? It's kind of like women who gape at me and say, you don't get mammograms? And I go, well, you're focusing on what I don't do. But what I do is that I am in touch with my breasts. And I may only touch my breasts for, you know, 15 seconds a day. But you figure 15 seconds a day is 2 minutes a week. And there's 52 weeks in a year. And that's over 100 minutes. We're getting on past an hour and a half of breast touching time here, spread out over a year. Or you can go to a doctor who will do an x-ray and touch your breasts for about a minute.
Yes.
We're different. We're all different beings. Some of us are more willing innately and inherently to take care of ourselves and be in touch with ourselves. Both things work. I had a dear friend of a friend who was going in for prostate cancer surgery, and
mm-hmm.
I got together because I was working on down there and it wasn't out yet, a big package of information about things he could do instead of prostate surgery. And after the surgery was done and he had the radiation thing implanted and he did all of that and he wound up incontinent and he had to do stuff with that and it went on for months and months and months. Finally, when it was all done, he handed me all the information back with a big thank you and a big kiss and he said, thank you so much. It was wonderful to have. I didn't look at any of it.
Hmm.
He said, for me, this was a journey in trusting the doctors. It worked for him.
Mm-hmm.
That was more than a decade ago. He hasn't thought about anything going on with his prostate, so far as I know, in all that time. So, I can't answer the question for you.
Okay.
But you can answer the questions that lead up to that question. How much do you need to know about what's going on in your uterus? And is this diagnostic test the only way for you to get that information?
All right. Well, I did meet with, finally, Stony Brook University Hospital gynecologist who was 100% supportive of anything that I was following from you and was very interested in borrowing copies of Down There. And very, very interested in how I was treating the polycystic, the cysts on the ovaries, and how I was treating the other issues, and what I told her I was taking, especially for anxiety and palpitations going through menopause, and telling her about mother work. She was very interested, and I felt completely and utterly trusting of a doctor who was not condescending and not instilling fear, but embracing other possibilities. So I'm still at that place of deciding what I'm going to do. And I think that you're absolutely right about being in touch with your body. Unfortunately, I was a child who had sexual trauma from incest. So I think that there are issues of being dissociative with my uterus and my reproductive organs because of that trauma, because of opening that fear and that pain and everything that's connected to it. So we'll see what I finally decide to do. But I so appreciate your wisdom and your insight, and thank you so much. There's so many people who, because of you, giving them an indirect introduction, and I hope I am an appropriate ambassador to what you have to share by sharing your books with them.
Thank you so much, Colette. I appreciate
thank you,
you as
well. I will let you know how it goes.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Good night. Green blessings.
Green blessings.
Okay, so the next person that we are looking for is Chakra.
Hi.
Hi, Chakra.
Hi.
Good night.
I'm doing great, and I'm so honored to be interviewed by you this evening. I've been a huge fan of your work for decades, and I've read many of your books and have heeded much of your advice, and I'm just really thrilled for this opportunity, so thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. I do need to offer you a tiny apology here, because I see that I don't have any biographical information. Usually I start off the show by telling people who you are and what you've done and why you're a special person. and of course I read all of that information because I don't have it locked up tight in my brain.
Of course.
And I do not have it right in front of me. So I'm going to ask you to tell us why are you here on this show. On Women's Radio and on Blog Talk Radio, what have you done with your life that would interest us?
Well, I think I'll give a tiny bit of background, but first I'll say that I am the creatress, the formulator of a very popular, at this point, sparkling probiotic drink called Kavita, and so I think that's how I was led to you, or we were led together, was through Kavita. And it's a drink that's available in natural food stores.
But I want to talk about you.
So that's that, and I'll tell you about me. But
please,
that's
talk
what
about
led me here. So my own background is I used to be a consulting holistic nutritionist and working 100% with food plans. That was my specialty. I used to teach a lot of classes and teach people about the whole foods kitchen, and I did that for decades and loved it very much. And so my own personal background is in holistic health and well-being and integrated lifestyle, and I have had a passion for food and cultured foods and fermented foods in particular. And
was that something that you grew up with? Are your parents?
I did, no. Not at all. Not at all.
So you grew up with like your mom making packaged foods?
No, my mom's Canadian, and she grew up in a much more, she always cooked everything from scratch, and she definitely, there was no packaged food. It's just that, and this is one of the questions on the list, but I think it's perfect just to mention it right now, which is that really my mother's health condition led me to making a lot of alternative choices, because my whole life she's not been well. She has Crohn's disease and ulcers and you name it. She's had digestive problems. And I think when I was about 13, I realized that if I went down what I perceive as or might describe as an ordinary track of life, I was likely going to have those similar results. And it started me on a path when I was very young of looking for options and finding them and finding early young teachers. And, you know, by the time before I was even fully out of high school, I had discovered Ann Wigmore, one of her first books. So I learned how to soak and sprout seeds. And I just began to do things differently because I wanted different results. And that really influenced my path because I had to figure out what to do so I wouldn't end up in the same position as my mom. And so culturing foods was one of the first things I learned how to do, was making simple thing like sauerkraut. And my parents were very tolerant because I made a lot of smelly messes.
Oh!
I didn't know better.
Blessed are the parents who can tolerate their children's smelly messes. So you learned the art of fermentation.
I did. I learned really by, you know, by just experimentation. And I've really had a long life love affair with fermented foods and began culturing, like I said, sauerkraut and different vegetables and seeds and nut cheeses and raw goat's milk kefir and yogurt and soft cheeses. And as I went, a whole new world opened up to me because these fermented foods add such dimension and round out the diet in a way that, you know, nothing else can. And you know, integrating wild foods into that and sea vegetables into that. I've done a lot of experimentation. And those experiments led me to ultimately working with water kefir. And that's how Kavita was born. And it was just the best ferment that I'd ever made. It was that good.
And, you know, I taught at a women's health symposium down in New York City a couple of weeks ago, and I railed against raw food and juicing, and after the talks that everybody gave, a woman came up to me and she said that she was a nurse who worked in oncology, and that she was so glad to hear somebody telling the truth about raw food and the fact that it's not nourishing. She said the people who have cancer who do the raw food and the juicing are the first ones to die. And she thought about what could she possibly do that would fit in with their belief system that could get them off the raw food and help them. And she, with this great smile on her face, oh, what makes her heart beat to think about the smile on her face, she looked up at me and she said, I got them to start eating fermented food.
Yes, that's
right.
Great.
And it was like, oh, right, you know, because, like, we know it's cooked food, but they think it's raw food.
Right.
So it's
perfect. Yeah, no, I didn't have to admit, I didn't make my first pot of chicken soup and learn how to make bone broth until I was over 50. And I am a huge advocate. And I really believe in diversity, and that there's no just one way. There's so many different paths and so many different possibilities. And so when I didn't know how to make bone broths, I went, I need to learn how to do this. This is a skill I need. This is a skill that I need to round out my abilities. And so that's how I approach things.
So you said that this drink is fermented water. Is that what you said? No. Obviously you didn't, since it doesn't make any more sense to you than it does to me. You said something about that it's a water ferment. Hi, Chakra, are you there? Did we lose you? Rebecca, are you there? Can you push buttons?
Yes, it looks like her call has dropped, but hopefully she calls back in.
Hopefully she'll call back in.
playing with us tonight.
I know.
And, you know, it's like this summer, and our CSA just kept producing cucumbers and producing more cucumbers and more cucumbers, and I'm looking at these growing piles of cucumbers. There's only, you know, so much tzatziki and so much gazpacho that you can make with the cucumbers, and they're, you know, my refrigerator is becoming a cucumber hangout. I'm thinking, what am I going to do? And suddenly, you know, it's as though a clap of thunder, I went, I'm going to lacto-ferment these cucumbers. Now, we might say, you know, make pickles. But nowadays, pickles is not really a fermented food. You know, you go to the store and buy pickles. It's like vinegar and salt and alum. And that's not the real thing at all. And
no, it's not the real deal.
Hey, Chakra's back.
I'm back.
Hey.
I'm sorry. I didn't know when to speak, so I was waiting
that's
for the moment
perfect.
To...
That's
okay.
Great. Okay. We don't want any dead air space here.
I don't know what happened there. My apologies.
That's okay. Well, I was asking you, I thought you had said something about Kavita being a ferment of water or a water ferment.
It is a water-based ferment. And
now, how do you ferment water?
Well, that's what we figured out. that's our proprietary culture, which is that when we first started making Kavita, I started replacing milk with water in a kefir ferment, and that's what I began doing. And then we figured out how to do that in a manner that would control the basically biggest problem with fermented foods. And on your list, you had brought up kombucha is something to discuss as well, and it relates to kombucha as well, because the issue with fermenting with water and sugar is the byproduct called yeast, and that's the real risk factor. That's where it turns into alcohol and all of that occurs when you home ferment beverages that are water based, and so we've mastered that and figured out a way to make Kavita so it's yeast-free. And that's really what makes it a super drink. Because
all right.
It's been a heck of a lot of work to figure that out. And it makes it a base with which we create all the Kavita flavors that's not only certified organic, but it's safe. It's clean. It's yeast-free. It's not going to aggravate you if you have yeast issues, and it's going to keep it on the very – all fermented drinks will have a touch of alcohol, but that touch very, very quickly escalates, and in Kavita, we're able to control that.
So what – do you see as the health benefits of using fermented foods?
Well, I saw the health benefits as one, pleasure, because I think that's a really important health benefit that we all need to experience pleasure. And I found fermented foods so diverse and so fun that brought a lot of pleasure. And then also for the probiotics, just being able to add probiotics into your daily diet without efforting to take a supplement or find something off the store shelf and be able to generate that on your kitchen counter is pretty powerful. And
so I could make Kavita on my counter?
Well, you could, except you wouldn't be able to control the alcohol. When you make water kefirs, the alcohol is something just
okay,
like
so
if you
I do
make
have
homemade.
To buy, so I do have to buy it.
You'd have to get Kavita. You'd have to buy it.
Okay.
To ferment water kefirs.
I got confused because I thought you said that one of the values is that you don't have to buy something.
I meant the benefits of probiotics is that if you culture and ferment your own food, you don't have to depend on buying probiotics off the store shelf for all your supplemental needs.
Got it.
Yeah, I was talking about in relationship to fermented foods.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. I talk about the three traditions, the scientific tradition that measures and fixes, the heroic tradition that cleanses and balances, and the wise woman tradition that nourishes wholeness. And obviously these three traditions do not agree on very much, but the one thing that they all agree on is that health starts with gut flora.
Oh, I love that. That's so great. Ah, well, that's true, and it's such a missing link, and so I love that they all come together over this most core basic reality that we need our gut flora.
We need good gut flora. And the current research into it, I'm sure you've been following it, is just fascinating, that gut flora actually predicates whether we feel generally optimistic or not, whether we feel pleasure in life or not. I was thrilled that you started off with pleasure, because it's not just that the probiotics themselves are pleasurable, but that having good gut flora actually increases your ability to experience pleasure.
Exactly. It's been said that the gut is the second brain. And I think that that's so true, and that without that good base camp, nothing else can grow and evolve. And so I have no studies on this. There's no fact to the statement, but I think at the core of it, that's why women especially love Kavita, because it's pleasure-centered. It feels good, it tastes good, and you're getting a probiotic hit. And your gut flora constantly needs replenishing, because for most of us in this culture, there's so many things challenging your ability to sustain good gut culture, whether that's stress or health issues or, whatever your whole digestive scenario is, whatever your challenges are, gut flora is also at risk.
Yeah, chlorinated water is a challenge to gut flora.
Yes. Oh, God, you hit the nail on the head. Exactly. Right,
and just that right there, and taking a shower in it is even, brings more into your bloodstream than drinking it.
Absolutely.
And chlorine
is like?
There.
Go ahead, sorry.
It's there to kill the bacteria.
Right.
Does its job.
That is something that when I used to consult and teach, I'd always say the number one thing you need to do is clean up the water at your main, wherever you live. It's not enough to just have something at your tap. You need it. You need, if you can't get it at your main, you need to do your shower heads. You need to at least get filtration at your shower heads and filter out the chlorine at the shower. You can't bathe your children in chlorinated water. This is the number one undermine for all of us, so we have to make an effort to clean this up. And
actually we have to make an effort to dirty it up.
Yeah, right. It's right. Different. It's yes. Exactly.
Well, the chlorine is put in there to cleanse the water, right? And what we want is dirty water.
And I just think it's poison. I think of it as poison, right? So that's how I perceive it.
But there is a reason that it's put in water, and that is to make it potable for people and safe for people.
Right.
But what we're talking about, what Chakran and Susan Weed are talking about here on Women's Radio, is that the chlorine in your water, while it does make it safe and potable to drink, kills gut flora, just like antibiotics kill gut flora. And I don't know if you're aware, Chakran, that essential oils also do the same thing.
Interesting. Very interesting. I didn't know that.
Yes, they're antibacterial and antifungal and antimicrobial, and that's what's in your gut, right?
Exactly.
And those are the kinds of things that we might expect to get from something like Kavita.
Beneficial microbes, healthy probiotics, in a format that's pleasurable,
It's easy to drink. It feels like a treat. It isn't medicine. It's a delight. It's refreshing.
You said probiotics several times, and perhaps
yes.
It would help our listeners if you could tell them more specifically what that means for something to be a probiotic.
Okay. Well, a probiotic is, I want to give it a simple definition, and I suspect you might have one that's simpler than mine, Susan, so please interject. But what I would say is that a probiotic is a life-building microbe that thrives in the gut, that helps all your intestinal flora and your villi stay active and alive, and it feeds them. And so it's basically healthy microbes, healthy beneficial bacteria, and healthy live, these are live microbes that are feeding and healing the gut constantly.
Ooh, I like that definition. That's wonderful.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Pro, I mean, if we break it down, pro means for, and bios is life.
Yes, for life.
So these are substances that feed life, but specifically the intestinal flora, the life of the gut. And what we're beginning to learn is that even just to say that is to really be simplifying something that's very complex, that there are different kinds of microorganisms, yeast, fungi, and bacteria at different parts of the digestive tract.
Yes.
For instance, we could call beans probiotic.
Interesting.
Because
yeah.
They contain a kind of fiber that's indigestible. And that indigestible fiber, when it gets to a certain part of the large intestine, feeds a particular class of bacteria that is very powerful in protecting our health.
Interesting. Yeah, very interesting point, because it really points to the diversity and how important it is, because maybe some people don't even eat beans. You know, it's not even in their awareness to eat beans. Some people believe beans are for peasants. I heard somebody say that recently, and I went, wow. Really am, I have never heard that, but really probably some people believe that. And, you know, whereas I think of beans as being one of the most, it's a basic food group, essentially.
Right. when I meet those people, I play a magic trick and offer them lentils.
Yes, yes. Oh, dear, lentils. Aren't they
right.
easy?
Which are just as peasant-based as beans, but most people don't know that. So we'll make it
right.
the haughty lentil, you know.
Yeah, I love lentils. They are
yeah.
so amazing.
And similarly with cooked greens, as opposed to raw greens, that those cooked greens offer certain kinds of fiber, both digestible and indigestible, that feed certain populations of organisms in the gut.
Yes, and also cooking certain greens, it liberates certain minerals that aren't accessible when they're raw. So
right.
I think don't you think the combination of those minerals, the fiber, all the nutrients become available? And you know, part of it is how healthy is your gut? Because if you don't have a super, super healthy digestive system, then you're really counting on cooking your food properly to access those nutrients more effectively.
You know, when I talk to people about digestion, I ask how many people in class could go out at midnight, eat half a pepperoni pizza, and follow it with a quart of orange juice. Right. I can see the faces turning green as they even think about it, right? And I said,
yeah.
Your 15-year-old teenager can do that without blinking an eye.
Right.
I said, we must understand that digestive fire wanes as we age.
Yes,
and therefore, as we age, the fermented foods, the probiotics become more and more important, because we need more and more help.
Exactly. And that I think we lean into those foods naturally if we're tuned into them and we're comfortable with them because they feel better and better to eat. It just makes sense. The balance feels really right. I've noticed through the years as I've increased, it's just been very natural. And I think as we age, I think that this is what people in the old country knew. That maybe we're having to relearn.
Indeed. Large sauerkraut. Crocs have seen them big enough to hide a full-grown human being.
Wow.
We have a couple of minutes, and we've thrown around a little bit about kombucha. And, of course, the funny lore around kombucha, you know, that it makes you live forever and so on. And it's a vinegar mother. It's a very specialized kind of organism. It's not really a mold. It's not really a fungus. It's not really a bacteria. But it does a great job of converting sugar into vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
And so kombucha, people often ask me about kombucha, and I say, it's a really tasty vinegar if it's stopped at the right point.
That's very fair to say that, yes.
Yeah, that right point varies from person to person.
Mm-hmm.
Some people like it more vinegary, and some people like it more fizzy and sweet.
Right.
So you got to kind of know. But it sounds like the Kavita is not vinegary at all.
It's not. It's much, much, much milder, gentler, more mellow than kombucha. Even very, very early on, kombucha might taste more similar to a more mature Kavita, but never, because it's a lacto ferment versus an acetobacter ferment, which is what kombucha is, it's much softer around the edges. And so Kavita is much gentler. Children love Kavita. When people drink Kavita, they don't tend to go through that big adjustment that people sometimes very proudly go through with kombucha. Of, you know, adjusting to being able to tolerate it or not liking it to start, but they get used to it. Kavita tends to be more user-friendly right off the bat because it is gentle.
Very wonderful. Well,
and, you know, with all this talk of it, I can't wait for you to taste it and let me know what you think. So we're going to have to make a taste of that.
Got to see if I can find some. Listeners, if you want to know more about this, go to www.kevita.com. www.kevita.com. kevita.com. Is that the best website, or is there some other place we should
go? That is it. That, or we, of course, have Facebook page. And I personally see all the emails that come through customer service at Kavita.com. And maybe we can offer something to Susan's network. We'll work on that next so that you can all try to get. Yeah.
Okay.
So much.
That's great. So I always like to give my guest the last minute of the show.
Okay.
This is your chance to make that impression on them. What do you want to leave them thinking about, feeling? What do you want to say this last minute?
Okay. Well, I'm tuning into that, and what really occurs to me is that that as women, we're whatever life stage we're at, whether we're in the waxing or waning stage of life, I think that it's so important to tune in and really find, as we started with pleasure, with your whole process with your health and with your digestion and your food and to understand that it's a journey and to really create the most pleasure out of that journey.
One thing I learned from Susan, actually, decades ago, I read to eat something wild every day. And that's been a probe I've used in my life to remind myself where I come from, you know, that I'm of the earth, and I make that effort, even if it's just a sprinkle of dough. I find it. That's part of my, it's like brushing my teeth. It's a basic that I've integrated into my life, and I have many tiny little rituals like that I do to keep me energized, to keep me on my path, and to keep it fun. And I find that is pleasurable. And so I wanted to just let you know that I created Kavita in that.
Thank you
with that
so much, Chakra, for being with me here on Women's Radio and my blog talk show as we reweave the healing cloak of the ancients. Good evening, everybody.
Thank you.